Good morning. I want to thank Morgan and Lori Elston for putting on this marriage conference. They need to be acknowledged in front of everybody, so let's give them a hand. Yeah. If you weren't here, and you know, it was great because Paul Tripp, we had him live streamed, and he's been married for 47 years, and he said he needed help. So we all need help. Amen. So if we do this again, let's all be there, because I know, Lou and it was good for Lou and I as we talked about our own marriage, and the kind of slogan was pulling weeds and planting seeds, right? So we're called to pull the weeds, how God pulls the weeds from us, and then plant these seeds, which were the fruits of the Spirit, the seeds, and it was. You know, we had 40 couples show up, which was, you know, really good showing. And so we're excited if you were there. Thank you for supporting that. And I think a lot of our marriages were edified and grown. So that was the first time we ever did that. So I just wanted to say that was a great win for our church. And I was excited about that. We are in Romans chapter 8. And we got to about verse 13, right around there. But I'm actually going to skip. We're going to come back to it, but I'm going to skip 14 through 17, and I actually want to start in Romans 8, verse 18. And I want us to remember that Romans 8 is, we talked about this last week, there is therefore now no condemnation. Now, we talked about what is it like to be around people that don't condemn you? I mean, who are the people that you know are for you, that know you, and they say, yeah, you know, you're quirky, Taylor, but I love you, man. You're just that dude, and I want you to be free. And it's a beautiful place to be. It's what Jesus says is the truest thing. My facial expression, when I think about you, is nothing short of a huge smile. That's the way I see you. And we do dumb things, and we get nervous about the way God's going to see it. But when you're around people and when you believe in a God who does not condemn you because the condemnation was placed upon his son Jesus, it's a transformative dynamic that happens. So this year I decided, as I talked to my youngest son Jake, I kind of thought maybe he was tired of me and sick of me being his baseball coach, right? And maybe like it was time, you know, like your time has passed, don't be a coach anymore. And we kind of had this weird conversation, and I think he kind of thought I didn't want to coach anymore, and I kind of thought in my conversation with him, he didn't want me to be his coach anymore. So I was like, all right, buddy, I'll take a week off. I'll take a year off. And so, you know, as the first couple games went and I experienced my first game in the stands not being a coach, it was horrible for me, right? I was in the stands, there's my boy, I just hated it. And so one of the coaches on my boys' team, unfortunately they're the Yankees, was this guy, my friend Bill, who I've coached with before. I've been the head coach. He's been my assistant coach. But the thing about Bill is he is a frontier pilot. Pilots for frontier. So he's gone all the time. And basically you can kind of pick coaches because you want their son to be on your team. And so Bill was in Las Vegas on last Saturday, and I called up Bill, and I was like, Bill, I know you're going to miss a ton of games because you're a pilot, and you got to be everywhere. And he's like, you want to be a coach, don't you? I said, yep, I do. I'm sorry, I do. That was horrible for me last Saturday. He's like, done. Like, you got it, bud. You should be the coach. You take my spot. I'll give you my hat. I'll give you my coach's jersey. You got it. You're the assistant coach now. You can coach. And so there I was yesterday as an assistant coach, feeling like, oh, my spot's right. But you know what? If it wouldn't have been for Bill, if it wouldn't have been for the feel I had around that dude, and that was, there is no condemnation. The guy is just salt of the earth. He knows, he gets it, right? And he could hear it in my voice. I wanted to be a coach. It's yours. You're not condemned. I know you probably feel stupid, right, for calling me. But you're the coach. And I thought, wow, that's love, man. That's love. You didn't shame me on the phone call. It was I was hating And I remember thinking after the game, I'm going to call Bill, but this is going to stink. I'm going to look like just weirdo. And he just affirmed me, you know? Do you believe God does that to you when you feel like you're in a vulnerable spot? There is there now no condemnation for those that are in Christ Jesus. Now, we come to this spot in verse 18. Here's what Paul says. You're going to deal with some hard things. And if you were here during the marriage conference, I mean, that was evident. There are going to be hard things in your marriage. In fact, your marriage, Paul Tripp said many times during this conference, the point of your marriage is not to bring you to this destination of happiness. The point of your marriage is God is going to use your marriage to sanctify you. He's going to use this as a, what do you call it? He called it a workroom. Like a workroom. God's workroom is your marriage. And he's going to work on you, and he's going to sanctify you, and he's going to make you more holy. And part of that is feeling and experiencing this world. And so Paul says to the church at Rome, and you need to make this first person. You need to make this very personal. Here's what he says. I consider that our, Westtown Church, our, right? I know a lot of your stories, and some of them are very tough, that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. For the creation waits in eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the freedom and glory of the children of God. Verse 22, we know that the whole creation, imagine this, the whole creation, the physical creation right now that we're a part of, has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. Not only so, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit, we groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we are saved, but hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. How do you experience the sufferings, right? The hardships of this world. How do you do it right now? Because some of you are in it. I know you are. Things have happened to your family that you just did not see coming. And you're trying to reconcile it. You're trying to experience and to know, okay, what does this mean? How do I deal with this? And so I want to give you two resources this morning. That's the goal of the sermon, to give you two resources for the suffering that you're experiencing. And I believe everybody in this room at some level, in some, you know, closet or crevice of your life, is experiencing some type of suffering. And Paul, the first thing I want to say, you know, as we look at Paul being a pastor, is that Paul says, look, there's a pattern here. And if you can understand this pattern, I think you can see it as being helpful to you. Because how many times have I had people come into my office and say this to me? Frank, okay, you're a pastor, right? You're supposed to know parts of the Bible. Here's my question. If God really loves me, then why are all these problems happening to me? Would a loving God do this? If God really loved me, why the tragedy of this family? Why the tragedy of whatever? If he loves me in Jesus like you say, Frank, like it says in the Bible, why all this? And in what we see here is that Paul says, look, suffering doesn't disprove the gospel. You know what he says? He says suffering is a sign. He says suffering is a sign that what? That you're actually in the gospel. Suffering, Paul is saying, he's almost flipping it on us. He's saying, you're so angry about this, but you know what it is? Suffering is an indicator that you are actually what? That you are a child of God. And some of us say, no, 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 that must mean I'm out of God's will. Remember, the book of Job is Job's friends saying, Job, see, God took all these things away from you. What are you doing wrong? I mean, life is about karma, right? That's what Job's friends were saying. Karma. It'll come back and bite you in the tail. No, that's not what the scriptures say at all. You know, that's not the way that it works. In fact, he says suffering is a sign that what? That you are a child of God. Sufferings, it says, ultimately what? I consider that our present sufferings that you experience right now are what? They're not worth comparing with the glory that you will receive. The glory that is coming to you. And so the pattern in Jesus' life, just think about Jesus. We're walking. I mean, we're what? Fat Tuesday was this week, right? Ash Wednesday, this past week, 40 days. 40 days of Lent lead us all the way to Easter Sunday morning. What was the pattern of Jesus' life as we walked to Easter Sunday? It was rejection. His family didn't understand him. His friends didn't understand him. He was despised. Jesus was rejected. He had no form, it says, by which we should desire him. He was not beautiful. He was a victim of injustice. He had one suffering after another. But what was his attitude in the Garden of Gethsemane? Think about Jesus in the garden. What did he say? Ultimately, he's praying this prayer, he's sweating blood. He says, no, okay. Not my will, but yours be done. It's not about me. It's about the will of my Father. That is this pattern. He was faithful and he was obedient and he was trusting. And as a result, what do we know about the story of Jesus? Walk the gospel, any of the gospels. His death led to what? To life. His weakness always led to his strength. Do you believe that that's the pattern of suffering in your life? Because that's completely counterintuitive. Someone tells me that, I'm like, yeah, whatever. You're selling me something, right? This can't be true. It means that there was this death and resurrection pattern. And it's in your life too. And if you enter into the sufferings of Jesus, you enter into a death resurrection pattern as a template, as a way for you to reconcile and understand the sufferings that you're experiencing right now. Because Jesus, God, in his divine plan, as the author, it says in Hebrews, and perfecter of your life, says, I am the narrator, right? I am George Lucas, right? I am the author of Star Wars. And though, Luke Skywalker, you may be in the middle of it, I promise you, I am the author of it. It will turn for the good, right? The good will defeat evil because I'm the author of it. Now, when you're in the middle of Empire Strikes Back, it doesn't look that way, man. It looks pretty grim. But George Lucas knew, no. We're going to follow this story out. I'm the storyteller, and I write the end of it. And as bad as it may look in your life, I guarantee you, it's going to turn. And death will turn into resurrection. Because if you thought Good Friday was the end, well, wow, you know, that's it. My sufferings, that's it. And if you decide to end your life there, like with whatever I'm suffering right now, this is the end, it's going to be a tough life. You will not live a hopeful life. I believe the fruits of the Spirit will be stunted in your life and they won't come out the way they're called to. And so what he says is, look, I want the sufferings that come into your life to actually change you. Who here has ever lifted weights, right? Have you ever done a bicep curl? Here's what any of the exercise literature says. As you're doing a bicep curl, and while you're doing a bicep curl and you're in the middle of a set of 10, it feels like you're getting weaker. On, you know, rep 6, 7, 8, 9, it feels literally like you're getting weaker. And what the literature and what the science says about your body is, ironically, what you feel is you feel like you're getting weaker, but you're actually getting stronger. as you do the curls, yeah, that's right. You can't do as many, but there's something going on, and I can't explain it. Ask my daughter, she'll tell you. I don't know what it means. But you will get stronger somehow. There is a amino acid or something that happens that goes on and things are repaired, and next thing you know, you get in there 3 days later and you can do a few more reps. You keep doing it, you do a lot more reps. As you get weaker, you get stronger. It doesn't seem right. It seems weird. And so as we've already looked at in Romans 5, he says this, Westtown, could you rejoice in the sufferings that you experience? Maybe if you're with us this weekend, even in your marriage, that when you rejoice in your sufferings, here's what we know, that suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance produces character, and character produces hope. And if we are a hopeful church and you're a hopeful family, you're a hopeful individual, you know what? You will not be disappointed. And people will come around you and say, there's something that smells, it just smells different around you. We live basically the same life, living in the same business, but you know what? There's something different about you. There's a perseverance, and there's a character that you have and a hope that you have that I don't know what it is, but I want it. You want to talk about evangelism? When you decide to suffer biblically, you don't think you're a billboard for Jesus? You don't think people are looking at you saying, how do you lose this loved one? How do you go through that sickness? How do you walk through this with your kid? You did this and you're still believing and hopeful? Yeah, that's right. And people come up to you and say, I don't get it. I absolutely don't get it. How could Johnny Erickson Tata lose all ability to, you know, 15 years old, jumps off a dock, loses her arms and her legs, quadriplegic, and then starts painting with her mouth and starts writing books. Because what people realized is she has a perseverance in her suffering that produced a character that I don't have, that produced a hope that when she talks and she paints with her mouth, and she's in a wheelchair for the rest of her life, and she has this joy that I don't have, and all my limbs are working. And that's what Paul is saying. Do you consider that your present sufferings are so insignificant compared to the glory that's coming? Man, I tell you what, we can live differently. Think of an acorn, right? An acorn. It has so much potential in it. What can an acorn do? An acorn can turn into an oak tree. And what can an oak tree do? An oak tree can do hundreds, if not thousands, of acorns, which through one acorn, this whole entire world can be like inundated with wood. It can produce that much, right, growth. And he's saying, that's what I'm talking about. You are the image of God. And here's the process. Here's the pattern. You know what? You're going to be broken and you're going to suffer. And your self-sufficiency in your marriage this week, as we've learned, has to be broken. And when you allow God to do what he needs to do, then this potential for understanding and compassion and insight is unleashed. And God will use you in ways that, you know, you never thought possible, right? That only a diamond can be produced, but it has to have this much pressure. That's what has to happen. And so as you think about suffering, as you think about the pressure of suffering, but more than that, he says, think about the pattern. When you understand the pattern that God uses, that suffering is what? Suffering in you is a sign that what? That you're a child. And so what we do is we continue on and we persevere and the character is formed and hope is formed. So do you consider your present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in you? That's the first thing. As a resource, see suffering as a pattern. If you can acknowledge it and identify the pattern of suffering in your life, okay, this is the pattern. And this doesn't mean that I've done something wrong. So the suffering you're feeling, if you feel like I got to change my behavior, or obviously I did something wrong, or God would not have placed this in me, that is terrible, according to Paul, theology. You read the book of Job, it's horrible theology. because God is doing in things in us. God did things through the suffering of Jesus that literally brought life, that we only could see in contrast to the suffering that he experienced. Do you believe that about your suffering? Or are you here at church? Are you becoming a, quote, spiritual person because you want your life to be successful, healthy, and wealthy? That's what we do here, right? That's what we do in rich, upper middle class America. We find ways to be healthy and wealthy and successful. And that's why it does look weird when you actually embrace the sufferings that maybe your family brings, maybe that your work brings, maybe that you bring. Jesus says, let me kill that and let me walk you to Easter Sunday morning. Second thing. Not only do we need to understand the pattern for your suffering and for my suffering, he says, look, I want you to have a perspective. And I think this is the most powerful one. You know, Paul, we know in this scripture, is saying, hey, what you need, he's constantly saying, here's what you need in order to handle your suffering. Here's what you need. You need hope. And in hope, I think a lot of it, is you need to be a patient person. Would your significant other, would your best friend call you a patient person? He says you have to look into the future. But the best thing is I need you, in verse 18, I need you to consider or to reckon. That is an accounting term in the Greek, right? To consider something is to put it in a spreadsheet and say, look, okay, I need to account for this. I need to really account. I need to really understand. I need to add it up and to count it up to figure out what the heck is going on. And I need to reflect on what my life brings. And he says that your sufferings aren't worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in it. So I want you to think about it this way, right? Two rooms. Just imagine two rooms, right? And imagine you put two people in two identical rooms, and you give them identical tasks, right? And this task is going to be menial, it's going to be boring, it's going to be laborious, it's manual labor. Same room, same task. First person, you say, you're going to work 80 hours a week, and you're going to have no vacation for 12 months. And you need to know that this work is going to be boring, it's going to be tedious, and it's going to be hard. And you say, at the end, to the first person, at the end of 12 months, you will get an annual salary of $15,000. Wow. Okay. 80 hours a week, boring, tedious. And then you go to the other person, and you say, 80 hours a week, it's going to be tedious, it's going to be boring, but here's what you're going to receive, $150 million for 1 year. 80 hours a week, 12 months out of the year. That's what you're going to get. Now imagine you're the first guy. And you're thinking to yourself, are you kidding me? Who could endure this? I'm getting 15,000 bucks. I mean, do the math. What is that per hour? It's ridiculous. But imagine you're the other guy. Whistle while you work. Right? Of course you would. $150 million? That's what I get? That's what my suffering is? Like the suffering that I'm experiencing now, 80 hours, 12 months out of the year, but I get $150 million at the end of this? You better believe I'm going to be singing Mary Poppins and all the Disney tunes during the whole time, right? Spoonful of sugar, right? Medicine go down. It's going to be awesome because the sufferings that I experience here are incomparable to what I get. It's not even, you can't even do the math. It's ridiculous. The generosity that I get for what? And that's what Paul is trying to say. How you experience your present is completely shaped by what? By what you believe your ultimate future will be. It is completely shaped. And if you don't think it's $150 million, then you got bad theology. Because many of us think, you know what? It ain't worth it. You kidding me? Being a Christian? Denying myself, picking up my cross, waiting until I have sex before marriage, to not steal, to not lie? I don't want to do any of those things. I only get $15,000. It ain't worth it. Because you only think this is the inheritance that you get. It's a lie, and you believe a lie. You don't understand the glory coming to you. $150 million. That's what we get. If you rest your deepest hopes of your heart in anything but God, right? Then you don't understand it. If it's a relationship or a political cause or anything, if it's your career, if it's writing with your life, the great American novel, it's wrong. It will not compare. So no matter how strong you think you are, no matter how stoic you think you are, you know what suffering does? It exposes what we believe. It exposes your true, right? Your true template of how you feel the world works. And Paul is saying, here's what the truest thing is. The future is beautiful. It's unbelievable. In fact, it says in this passage, God has the audacity to say, go ahead and look at the Grand Canyon, right? Go ahead and go to Zion National Park. Go ahead and go to Glacier, you know, wherever. I don't know all the different parks and beauties that are there. Go ahead and look at them. It doesn't compare to what's coming, right? Because what do we know? That creation groans. Even create the Grand Canyon groans for what is yet to come. It is not perfected yet. The Grand Canyon, we're going to laugh at it. Do you know what you're going to be able to experience? Imagine if you lost one of the five senses that you have. Imagine if you lost sight. You have everything else but sight, and you think, man, I live this terrible life. All right? But I want you to think about it this way. You know, you think the difference between having five senses and four senses is huge, but imagine when you're glorified. I would imagine we'll have 1,000 senses. And so if you compare the five senses that we have today, we might as well be a vegetable. All of us in this room might as well be a zucchini compared to what we will have one day. That's what he's saying. Do you not get it? And when you understand that, right? When C.S. Lewis says, when you understand the weight of glory, you know what happens to your sufferings today? The things of the world will go strangely dim. In the light of his glory and grace, in the light of what you know is coming, how do you view your suffering? How do I view our suffering? Do you view it as not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us because the Grand Canyon groans to be way more beautiful than it is right now? It does. Right? That waterfall that you went to in Oahu, that's a joke compared to the beauty that you're going to see one day. When the heavens come down and everything is perfected. If you know that to be the truth, and you know that ultimately Easter is coming, and that Jesus is healing all things, and that Jesus on the cross was a warrior, and that Isaiah 53 says this, that he went forth to face our enemies, evil and sin and death, and he was crushed by them. And now it says he's groaning. He's dying and he calls out and no one comes. And you know why no one comes to Jesus on Good Friday? The groaning that creation pushes us to the groaning of Jesus on Good Friday. The Bible says that God was absorbing in himself the penalty the human race has for what? For all evil that we've done to each other. That Jesus was absorbing all that. And he was paying the penalty. And because Jesus was abandoned in his groaning, here's what it says, you and I will never be. Because Jesus groaned and the Father didn't respond and he ultimately took on the greatest suffering, you and I will never have to experience that. And that is the gospel. Because Jesus was forsaken in his what? In his death groan, you and I are heard by the Father in the way in which you hear your kids cry. Because you know the cry when they need help. I know when my kids cry And it's a different than just one of those, you know, I need another Oreo cry. When it's something wrong, and he hears it, and he's there. And that's the gospel. He hears the cry of a kid, and he loves you. And he left his own son to respond to you. The groaning of his own son, he left so that he would respond to you. If you can understand that, and the glory that's coming, I tell you what, I think we are hopeful, not naive, and not aloof, but we are hopeful, joyful people. And the fruits of the Spirit come out in us. Where are you this morning? How do you deal with your suffering? Is it not worth comparing to what is yet to come? I hope you believe that. I think it'll change your life. I think it'll change this part of Tampa if we can understand that. Let's pray and ask God to be with us. God, thank you that Paul says there is no condemnation, but he doesn't say that there is no suffering, because everyone in this room is experiencing suffering. But Father, suffering is comparative. It has to be compared to something. And when we compare it to the glory of what's yet to come, Paul says there is no comparison. So we can suffer. Because inside of us, strength, perseverance, character, and hope are produced. But we know that that requires faith. And faith is something that we do not yet see. And so give us faith. As is prayed in the gospel, help our unbelief. Thank you for Jesus. Thank you for denying him and responding to us. And the power of God, the Son of your Son, Jesus. And that it ultimately, that death and hell and Satan did not overcome. And he did. That's our hope in your name.